Welcome. You are listening to the Retirement Lifestyle Show with Roshan Lungani, Eric Olson, and Adrian Nicholson. This show is an exploration of ideas to help you work toward your ideal retirement. Get ready for the financial independence of your dreams.
Welcome to the Retirement Lifestyle Show. I'm your co-host, Roshan Lungani, here with Adrian Nicholson. Excited for a new episode. I think this is a great topic today, Adrian. How is your, we're recording every other week now. So Adrian, how's the last couple weeks? How have they been for you?
They've been great. I'm excited, looking forward to Thanksgiving this week. That means also the holidays are fast approaching. So I'm just excited and looking forward to spending some time with my family.
Yeah, as am I. Anything special for Thanksgiving this year out of the ordinary, or is it the same plans you typically have, which I'm a fan of, by the way, consistency, keeping it simple.
Yes, same plan, which I'm very excited about. My wife and I were just going to my parents' place, and my brother and his wife will be there. So just really excited just to catch up with all of them, see all of them, celebrate. So I'm really looking forward to it and excited.
Yeah, and you've been married now for a little over a year. Does it feel normal saying my wife now, or does it still feel new?
Yeah, I've gotten used to it. So I mean, pretty much after a week or so, I got used to it right away. So it's nice now. So I've been enjoying it. Everything's been good on my end, and just really excited also to be here and record an exciting episode today. All good vibes on my end, ready to go.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, let's jump right into it. And this is I think this will be a great one, very helpful for people that are listening, particularly for our younger listeners. Today, we're going to talk about a section from a book called The Wealthy Gardener, Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son by John Safarik. And I'm definitely a fan of this book. I think it'll help anyone, depending on where you are with your financial stages of your life. And I found it to be a great book, very interesting. I'm actually going to recommend it to my niece, who's a recent college grad and is working at her first job, because I think she can gain a lot from it. So this is, as I said, it's a great book that we would highly recommend. We're actually covering today just one section of the book. So, and it's our take, our interpretation on it. So I would tell everyone else, like I said, I'd recommend it to go check it out. The section of the book we're going to review today, it's under part two, chapter five, The 10 Seeds of Wealth. So we're going to go over what the author has as the 10 Seeds of Wealth. And let's jump right into the 10. So Adrian, why don't you start us off with the first one?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The first one is think well. And I think this is a great place to start. We're talking about building wealth, starting out, just having a mindset around wealth, how to create it, generate it, setting a clear goal. It also mentions having a why. And I think that's something that people are really having discussion nowadays, whether it's wealth or your career or your retirement, whatever it may be. Like, what's your why? Why do you get up in the morning? What motivates you? What keeps you going to try and achieve your goals? So I think that's an extremely important part here, because that's the thing that's going to keep you on track while you continue this wealth journey.
Yes. And I think having it top of mind with all goals. Now, this book is, you know, financial and focused on building wealth. So he's got, you know, telling you to keep it top of mind. But there are definitely a few things. There was a quote I liked from this section by Robert Collier. It says, all riches have their origin in the mind. A couple other things that I pulled from this is he had said, and so the way this book is structured is it's a conversation. So you've got the wealthy gardener speaking to, and in this case, I don't think it's actually his son he's speaking to. I believe it's Jimmy, who's a recurring, you know, character, a friend of his in the book. But he says to him, average people want wealth without the sacrifices of accumulating it. So he talks very much about differentiating yourself from average to accomplish some of these great things that you'd want. That's one of the quotes there. So have that wealth target top of mind. Another quote he uses from Robert Kiyosaki from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and this book really did remind me of that. It's a different take. It's worth it to read if you have read Rich Dad, Poor Dad as well. So I would still recommend this. But the quote he says is, the wealthy buy luxuries last while the poor and middle class buy luxuries first. So he talks a lot about that and some of the other virtues as well. But the first is just keeping that goal of wealth top of mind, assuming that is a goal of yours, right? And it very much is for the wealthy gardener and his friend.
Yeah, and this book has a lot of quotes, and they also use the power of storytelling as well to highlight these important concepts and these themes for this wealth creation strategy, these practical steps, which I think is very powerful. I always enjoy and love stories. I think it's a great way to get messages across. And again, the way they structured this is for anybody of all ages to really understand the importance and how to achieve this wealth that people are always trying to work towards. So I think this is a really good place to find a lot of inspirational quotes, stories, just a way for you to kind of understand a lot of these concepts that people really work to every day. So yeah, that's a great place to start.
Yeah, it definitely is. It reminds me of a Henry Ford quote, which I like, and it may have actually even been in another chapter of this book, but he says, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And I think this one about having wealth top of mind, if you think you can accomplish that goal of wealth or you think you can't, you are right. So he wants you to be thinking, and I'd agree, thinking about that goal and focusing on it. Next one I really liked, Adrian, like frugality. What stood out from you? Well, actually, frugality, and you know, he says, I think a good way to start this out is he had said, everybody wants a cure for financial problems, but nobody likes the medicine. Frugality is the medicine. So if you want to build wealth, being frugal and building wealth go hand in hand.
And you got to imagine, there are some people out there where they hear this word, they kind of associate it with something bad or something negative, or just being frugal in a way tends to not really register well with people, especially when it comes to generating wealth or planning or whatever it may be here. But I guess what they're really just trying to point out is the importance of it and just to keep it on top of mind as well, because they say when it comes to building wealth, it's both offense and defense. The offense part is about the income, generating return, making money, where the defensive part is just, where can you maybe budget, cut back? What could you do to really make sure at the end of every month that you're starting to build up a saving, which we're going to get into further on in the podcast, but this driving home the importance of having both an offense and defense here. So that's something that I took away from this part.
Yep, I agree. I got a couple other things I think are valuable and stand out. Here's a quote that says, rich people stay rich by living like they're broke. Broke people stay broke by living like they're rich. And it reminds me, there's this meme that was going around a couple years ago that had a picture of, you know, of, I think it was Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates with each other. And it said something like, you know, billionaires in a room and not a Gucci belt in sight.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Just making the point that they're not really focused or spending their money on that. The other one I think is very powerful that is, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep.
Yeah, I saw that one. That's a good one, too.
I've heard that many times. Yeah, I've heard that many times. And I've heard it in the context often with taxes. You're talking about tax management, making sure you don't, you know, pay more than you have to in taxes and then say it's, you know, not about what you make, it's about what you keep. I think this is a better way to look at it when he's using frugality as that category. And I think savings is another one where this would apply. Right, it's about what you keep, and you know, there's a difference between affluent and wealthy. Affluent, as you know, that you can hear almost flow in the word fluent or you know, flowing. That's money coming in and out, right? Where wealthy is when you have money. So, and I'm looking at this because I know I remember the origin. It says archaic, from flowing freely or in great quantity. So that to me is, affluent means you've got money flowing. Wealthy means you've got money that you have permanently.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing I guess I would add on top of this before we move to the next one is delayed gratification. And I think that fits very well here, where you mentioned before, maybe making some sacrifices, making some cutbacks now so that you be in a better position in the future where maybe you can start enjoying some of the wealth that you built up or something that you wanted to do for a while, whatever it is, where right now you're deciding to maybe have a discipline where you're saying, you know, I'm going to make some changes here and stick to this. So in the future, I'll be able to enjoy this. So I think delayed gratification here is a very important discipline that can help you achieve some of these goals that they outline in the book or whatever your personal goals may be.
Yeah, I completely agree. Another one that I think fits for with this section, but with other sections as well.
Exactly.
Next one he talks about is profitability. I'll let you start off with that one, Adrian.
Yeah, so when I was looking at this one, I'd rather it just be cash flow because that's what I think about when you're just generating excess cash, the money that you have left over every month. And that's just going back to what I described as being offense and defense, so you have extra money at the end of the day. Looking at your income, looking at your expenses, and hopefully that your income outweighs your expenses so you have money left over to do whatever you want with it, whether it's saving, investing, saving for a goal. So that's just something that I really took from it, where I like the idea of cash flow more than profitability, but there's a lot of overlapping ones here, so I'm not going to be too critical about it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And you know what he had said from a previous section, you know, on frugality, of it's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep. I think profitability is the definition of that. Now, he just uses the word profitability, but the very first paragraph, he says, wealth is built on profit-ability. So I think he's making the point, you know, I think that's why he used it. You know, this is the ability to profit. And for him, and this is exactly what he says, it's the ability to earn money and spend money in a way that results in excess money to save. So there are connections or almost sections that I think repeat a little bit, or they definitely overlap significantly. But here with profitability, he's talking all about having excess money to save, paying yourself first. And the point he makes with this that I think is valuable, because people hear pay yourself first all the time. For those who haven't, paying yourself first means when you get your paycheck, the very first bill you pay, quote unquote, is to yourself, which is in your savings. His point on here with paying yourself first is that he says it imposes an artificial environment of scarcity. So if you create that artificial environment of scarcity, it'll increase your savings. Another thing he had said here that stands out, now this one I hadn't heard before, he had said, Parkinson's law is no matter how much money people earn, they tend to spend the entire amount and a little bit more. And I think when you see the low savings rates in our country, in the United States, that really appears to be true. People are overspending and not saving.
And what I was going to mention is my mindset really when it comes to profitability, and you kind of touched on this, was the money you really have after saving, because again, that's a good starting point here where it comes to wealth creation as well. So the money, the excess money that you have after saving, to me, you know, maybe different for other people, is where you can define that as profitability or cash flow.
Yes. Yeah. And I like your take on it, with it calling it cash flow as opposed to profitability. Is another one I liked on here. He says the 40-hour work week is for survival income. So a lot of this book, he's talking about working more than average, using your free time. And he generalizes that all the wealthy do this. They use I'm not by no means saying he's wrong. I really like the sentiment, but he's saying don't just use your 40-hour work week and think you're done, because that'll lead to being average. And here, once again, the 40-hour work week is just survival income. That'll get you to survive, but you need to build beyond that. Whether that means you've got a higher paying, higher responsibility job that very often tends to be more than 40 hours, whether it's your own business or whether what's become, you know, popular the last few years is some kind of side hustle. But he's very much suggests having something, or not just working 40 hours.
Yeah, I agree.
Next one, I think, is another great one. Get out of debt. And one thing that stood out to me is he says, Debt is the slave master in free society. It chains workers to wages. And I think that's, there's a little back and forth on the term he uses with, you know, slave on there. And he, very, the wealthy gardener, very much believes that. And Jimmy, who he's talking to here, sort of argues with him, but he's got some answers to it. But I think the sentiment of getting out of debt is a powerful one. What did you take from this section?
So, I mean, if you're a listener or viewer, you probably heard us talk about this subject a lot, about debt, ways to pay it off, what are your mindset around it should be, having a plan in place. So I guess the biggest thing that I took from this too, that maybe we haven't discussed before, is that debt is really dangerous when there's an economic downturn. And I think that's the important point that I zeroed in on here too, where let's just say, a common example is somebody that has debt, has a high income earning job, but then they lose that job. Not only did they lose their income on a monthly basis, but they also have this debt. And if it has high interest rates, they feel like they're getting pinched from both sides. So I guess that's the biggest takeaway I really had, or new territory that I found interesting that I really didn't consider, that, you know, maybe some people do have a lot of debt out there, but the economy is good for them right now. Their job is stable. But if something unexpected comes up, like I mentioned, an economic downturn or whatever it may be that impacts them, that debt is something that could really be something that adds on top of a bad situation.
Yeah, very much so. I completely agree with you. That's actually, you know, as we've gone through this huge rate hike cycle,
yes,
that's one thing that a lot of investors have been concerned about for smaller companies.
Yes, yes.
You know, smaller companies that have debt, if they have to refinance at the rates higher, or if their profitability goes down, if there's a recession, they won't be able to pay that debt. But yeah, it very much is impactful when you consider just the household income as well.
And the last thing, and this is something that we talked about before, but something I really like and I'm a big fan of, is, and they mention it here, take the small wins. If you have a bunch of different type of debt out there, maybe consider paying off the smaller one first, where, you know, once that's gone, it feels like a small win. You feel some type of accomplishment, and then you can allocate it towards the next thing on there. But then there's the people out there that also would say, maybe don't focus on the smaller ones, maybe focus on the ones that have a higher interest rate. I also agree with that as well. Everybody's situation is different. We talked about this before, but having some type of strategy, and these are two here, either focus one on high interest rate or paying off the small one first, both will benefit as it comes to paying off that debt over time. And that's something that they mentioned here, time. It takes time to do this. A plan and time is something that's very valuable here. And if you have a focus on it and if you continue at it, it'll pay off in the long run.
Yes. And I think that the time, what you just mentioned, that point, it definitely something that's covered on, I think, is very important. Not only paying the debt off, but also when it comes to some of his other tips coming up, or which is about the investing side of things.
Yes. Journey, marathon, we'll get into that.
One last point I'll just, yes, exactly. And one last point I want to make on debt before we move on, unless you have another one, is he had said any debt that earns you a profit is good debt. So, you know, we compared to give a comparison. If you're going out and if you're not paying your credit card balance, I'm not commenting on affordability or anything like that for anyone that's got credit card balances working out of debt. I think that's a good cause to work towards. But if you've got credit card debt and you're going out to eat at a restaurant, you've got a $100 bill, you've got a credit card that you're paying, you know, 28% on, and if you're not paying it off in a year, well, that restaurant cost you $128. If you don't pay it for 2 years, well, that restaurant you ate at 2 years ago and spent $100 is costing you a little over $160 now. And it's just going to continue to grow. So, you know, we talk about the snowball effect when it comes to saving and investing and you know, just continuing to grow and compound. And we'll talk about that today. The same thing happens with debt. So make sure you get rid of bad debt. Oftentimes, good debt is viewed as, like, your mortgage is viewed as good debt. But I would also say, and what he uses here, any debt that makes you money can be good debt, right? So it's profitable debt. So instead of comparing your personal home mortgage, well, if you get a rental property and that has a mortgage on it, that can be good debt. I mean, I have a friend who he sold his business years ago, made a lot of money off of that company, did a great job. It all worked out well, but there was a stage where he was paying some of his payroll on his personal credit card, right? Not necessarily the best move or the way you want to go, but he was starting a business. He had no options, and you'll hear stories of that all the time. And even if it didn't work out, and it is credit card debt, he was attempting to make it productive debt, right? Debt that makes money for you. Fortunately, it did work out. I'm not telling people to go out and charge up your credit cards to start a business. What I am saying is distinguish between good and bad debt and manage it accordingly. Productive debt is debt that's making money for you. And the mortgage, once again, is talked about as good debt. Well, and that is, you know, you're building equity in that home that you have versus the alternative of renting.
Yeah, with that business owner example that you just gave, in my mind, it's the risk element as well that I guess really gets talked about with investing, but you don't really consider as well with debt. When you're taking on debt, you're basically taking a risk that you'll pay it off on time, that it will help you whatever your situation may be right now, where you'll have a better situation in the future. So I guess that's the only point I'll add to that. But I like that example you gave for the business owner, that real world example.
Yeah. And actually, Adrian, before we move on, I think you adding the point on risk is very much well timed with this, because I don't, as I said, I don't want people to think I'm saying go and, you know, charge your credit card up and start a business, but you've really got to consider the risk associated with this as well.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to, there's a bunch of successful people out there, a bunch of people that, you know, have made this journey before, and the amount of risk, adversity, you know, bad downturns, economic downturns that they face is a lot. But again, taking bad situations and learning from them and growing from them is key, and probably something that they've really said led to their wealth creation journey as well, their failures along with their successes.
Yes, very much so. Next one on here, save urgently. And I like the way he says that, right? Not just to save, but save urgently. And at the beginning, he talked about thinking wealth and keeping it top of mind. And he says banking excess income should be a top priority, is the one way he puts it. So I really like the way he says that, and I think that's a very good way to think about it. You've got to make banking your excess income a top priority, because I think that'll help both sides of the equation, right? Earning income and being frugal will become priorities if saving urgently is something you're working towards.
What I would add on that is be smart how you save. I guess when you think about save urgently, it just thinks about just, you know, taking your excess cash flow, whatever it may be, and just saving it. But what I'm trying to point out here, and probably what they mentioned as well, just be strategic how you have certain saving goals as well. Just don't let it, well, I guess I'm kind of going into a point that they'll make on, don't let it lose out to inflation. We'll talk about that later. But just be smart and strategic about how you save. Maybe your first goal is to have an emergency fund set up. Maybe it's to save towards something, whatever it may be. And once you start hitting those goals, you think of another way to allocate your saving as well. So that's the, I guess, next level I'd add to that. Save urgently. Yes, I agree with that. But then start being smart with it as you see your savings start to accumulate. Maybe look at different areas as well, so you're being as efficient as possible, not just sufficient.
Yes, very, very much so. And as you said, that is one of the 10 seeds he touches on. The last point, he uses the analogy or the story of get invited to the banquet of ownership and investing. To be wealthy, you must transition from being consumers to owners and investors. And I think that's a very powerful piece of saving. You're not saving urgently just to save urgently. There will be opportunities that come to you as the saver that the other people who are not savers do not get to take part in. So savings creates opportunity.
Yeah, I guess I'll go back on my example because I guess I'm just really getting stuck on the definition. I guess the definition I gave is where you're basically saving into like a bank that has zero interest. But I guess some people think, you know, hey, I may be saving because I'm putting money in a 401k. That's my definition of saving. Or somebody else is saying, hey, I'm saving in this high interest bearing account. That's my interest, my definition of saving. So I guess be clear about what your definition and your goal is to saving. I guess that's the point I'll want to make just to be as clear as possible.
Yeah. I think the you know, wealthy gardener's point in here is to save, and later on he goes into where to save. And I think it's very much a structured in order where, you know, he has get out of debt before saving. And I've helped people with this in the past where I would say in order to get out of debt, you need to save. You need to have a saving so that if an emergency comes up, you can self-finance that versus using debt. So they go hand in hand. And then I guess also going hand in hand is where you save, which we'll touch on in some of the upcoming seeds of wealth. The next one he has in the 10 seeds of wealth is keep score. So Adrian, I'll let you review that one first.
This is tracking your net worth, looking at your assets, your liabilities, seeing where you stand here. And they kind of mention once you're pretty much measuring something where you're measuring your financial situation, where you're at, given your assets and liabilities, there's just a little bit of excitement to it where you see where you stand and you're able to manage it better. You can see how your net worth really tracks on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And that's something that's very valuable to keep you on track on this wealth journey.
Yes, and with the net worth, I don't think he gives a time frame, a frequency to review it, just to review it. I would say you probably want to review it at least once a year, depending on how much it motivates you. But and he uses the term frequently as far as reviewing it goes, but it's a tracking net worth leads to consistent right actions. So I would actually, you know, speaking for the wealthy gardener for a moment, if I'm guessing what he's thinking, I actually think he'd say tracking it annually wouldn't be enough, and you probably want to do it quarterly because he's looking to manage habits. And at the beginning, he had said think wealth. I think part of the tracking is to keep wealth top mm-hmm. of mind.
And this could be really the starting point if anybody hasn't done it before or hasn't reviewed it in a while, because I think that really plays into all the other things that we described on what your profitability looks like, what's your liabilities, your debt, what does that look like, what your savings should be. So that's a really good starting point to see what direction you want to head into and where you stand.
The next one we've got on here is beat inflation.
That's a big one nowadays.
So actually, Adrian, why don't you start us off with that one as well? Because you talked about that on the saving urgently
yeah,
area.
Yeah, this is, I guess I'll just give like an example for this one and just think about it as a race. You have your cash and then you have inflation. And as you know, inflation is something that really impacts the expense part, the defense part of your financial situation. And what you really need to consider is how well your assets, whatever they may be, keep pace beating inflation. As we experience recently, inflation has been significantly high, and that's something that's been on the top of people's mind and something that they really look for nowadays to make sure that their investments, their assets are beating it. Because again, the concept of purchasing power, you don't want your purchasing power to be beaten by inflation over time.
A couple of examples he uses in here is he had said, and Adrian, I'm going to see how well you remember the chapter. I'm going to quiz you real quick. In 1980, do you remember what a money market paid in his example?
Money market. I'm probably roughly going to say probably a little bit higher. I'd go around like 7%.
It was paying 12.68%.
12.6%. I bet a lot of people wish they could get that nowadays.
Yes, a lot of people do. And a lot of people are unfortunately wrong by wishing that. Is his point, because inflation was 13.5%, meaning you're losing 0.82% of your purchasing power with inflation. So in his case, you really, in his example, you want to make sure that you are continuing to to not only save, but have your money grow. And he says money doesn't grow annually based on the rate of return. It grows based on how much it beats inflation.
The real rate, that's also something that people should look at as well. What's your investment returning minus inflation as well is something that you really need to bake into your formula to see how you're keeping pace.
Next, he talks about the eighth seed of building wealth is about minimizing risk. Adrian, what's your takeaway from this section?
The biggest takeaway I have is just reduce the odds of losing money. I mean, when it comes to, we just talked about inflation, and in order to beat inflation, you might have to take some risk out there with whatever investment it may be to beat inflation, but trying to beat inflation may cause you also to lose money depending on whatever the investment is, if it's not profitable. So just keeping that on top of mind, minimizing the risk. We also talked about debt too, not taking on debt if you know the situation arises, whatever it may be, because again, that's another risk component. So minimizing it wherever you can, whenever you can, is something valuable here as well.
Yeah, and it's great that you added debt here. Not something necessarily something he added, but debt increases your risk, right? If your the stability of your financial household is lowered or destabilized when you have a lot of debt. So he says, use boring strategies for investing. If you want excitement, go to Vegas. Don't invest your money in search of excitement.
You know, it could also come to your income as well. Are you in a stable career or not? Are you a business owner or not? Understanding certain cycles. So risk sometimes just doesn't apply to investments or debt. It's just life in general, different opportunities that you take a part of to try and achieve that wealth goal that you have as well. And a lot of wealthy people, successful people out there have dealt with so many type of risk out there that, you know, is something that is a part of this journey. And where you can cut back on it is great, but just know that it's out there, and that's something that could be an obstacle for you, is something that's very real.
Yes, it is a very real risk, and you want to be careful. Whereas this section is minimize your risk in investing and in your debt management or debt minimization strategies. Next, multiplying it is the title of this chapter, and he said, the great minds are awed by compound interest. It's hard to fathom exactly how much money multiplies over time when all earnings are reinvested.
Yeah, that reinvestment part that you said is key here.
Yes, it very much is. Not pulling money out when you're actually reinvesting it, putting the money back in and letting it continue to grow. One minor point he made that I actually think is very powerful with investing, he said, think in decades, not in years. And why I think that's so powerful is I think with investing, people think in literally minutes and days. You know, he's saying not only years, but think in decades, which is very much similar to what Buffett states as well, right? You've got to think very long term, because in the long term, you put all the odds in your favor. You know, his quote around this is, impatience never made my money grow faster, and wealth multiplied best with enduring patience.
Yeah, and a story too. I believe this was probably under the inflation section, but it applies here. It talks about a person having $100, they keep it under the pillow, and then 20 years, they wake up, you know, they're excited, they still have their $100, but then, you know, they lose to inflation. That's something too where, you know, you're not really winning because of it just sitting there in cash, not doing anything, where you have to look for different opportunities out there, whatever your situation is, to see if you can compound that and grow that whatever way you can.
Yes. Yeah, very, very true. Very true. When I think of this and, you know, the thinking in decades, it just makes me think of investing. I've heard Warren Buffett once, he was talking about CNBC, and he had said they broadcast the markets like it's a sporting event now. And I know the average holding period has come way down. So Adrian, I'm going to ask you for your guesses. What do you think the average holding period is for U.S. stocks in 2022? So what was the average time someone bought and sold in 2022?
I'm going to go real low here. I'm not even going to say a year. I'm going to do like 6 months.
God, it's interesting you said that. It's actually a little bit higher than that, but the fact that you said really low in 6 months when it's 10 months, right? So to me, 6 months and 10 months aren't that different. But when you, the way you said really low, yeah, it's crazy how low it is. Now, the follow-up question I have for you, in the mid-70s, what do you think the average holding period was?
So I got to assume it was higher than that in the 70s too. And I got to believe technology plays a big role in here, because nowadays you can just trade a lot quicker. It's pretty much by your fingertips, where the decade you said was the 70s, correct? Yeah, so I would just, this is a guess here, I'd say maybe 3 years.
5 years. And yet you think about the other thing that's gone down is you know, a good thing, which is the cost to buy and sell have gone down. But with online brokers versus having to go to a broker, information is more readily available. But I think this is a negative consequence of that, is that the holding period, has gone down. And this reminds me, there was a study, it's not a new one, but I'd recently come across it, that it's from 2017. Fidelity analyzed their client accounts, and they found that their dead clients outperformed. People who were dead, so they couldn't change their portfolio, outperformed people who were trading. So just another argument or data point to use for being a long-term investor and thinking in decades versus months and even years.
That's an extreme example, but it kind of makes sense.
It does. There's also another book we've talked about on here that was 10X in Investing. I'm gonna look up the title. The author is Chris Mayer. So, but he has something on there where 100. He's looking at for 100 baggers. So that's the name of his book, 100 Baggers. And he goes, a 100 bagger is an investment that grows 100-fold. So over time, and he talks about, as he's analyzing all these, he talks about how much they could have lost along the way. So I remember Monster Beverage is one of them, Apple's another one, where you would have suffered like 80% drawdowns on your way to 100x on that investment. So, you don't want to make emotional decisions, and sometimes maybe you don't want to make any decision. Another good one I've heard, I wish I could credit the source, was that the moment you think about selling an investment, now this is from a money manager who really analyzes his holdings deeply, goes really deep dive to understand the business of the holdings. He says if he thinks about selling the investment, wait 2 years to make that decision, because oftentimes whatever is causing you to think about selling it is a short-term problem that'll be gone in that 2 years. And maybe your original thesis was correct.
Yeah, and I gotta imagine over those 2 years, you get more data, more information to add to your research to make your decision even better, so.
Yeah, it stops you from making emotional decisions. The last one, the 10th seed of a building wealth he's got is passive income. The ultimate goal of wealth is security and personal liberty, is how he starts out the chapter, which I really liked. Ever since I started in this career doing financial planning, I saw a speaker, this is literally over 20 years ago, and he had said people are typically looking for either freedom or security from their money. So freedom being I can do anything I want at any time, and security being I never have to worry about money. And I think this sentence by the wealthy gardener captures both. The ultimate goal of wealth is security and personal liberty.
Independence, yeah, I agree here. Passive income, sometimes the goal is just where your investments return, what they pay off, covers your expenses, your needs. So it really is just automated, don't have to think about it. It's pretty much easy, and that's a really nice setup.
Yeah, look, I agree. A couple other quotes I really liked from this section. When your investments pay you more than you can earn at your day job, you will then drink the drink of freedom that few have ever tasted. A job is trading your hours for money, and investment is trading your money for money. A job is where you work for cash, and investment is where cash works for you. I really like this section as well. He does go into real estate investing, similar to Rich Dad Poor Dad in this section, which is an option. Not the only option, but it is an option for those as well. You know, I say that from not only a bias here, you know, the fact that we do a lot of investing in publicly traded securities, stocks and bonds, but also in just what I've seen with my clients. You know, I've got clients that have that snowball where their investments are growing greater than their spending, where their dividends are paying them more than they need, which would definitely qualify as mm-hmm. passive income as well.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with that, Roshan.
So we went through the 10 seeds. I'm going to go through the list really quickly. Before I review that list, Adrian, anything to add on passive income or any of the other sections?
I guess the last thing I'll add to passive income as well, I don't think we touched on it though, but I guess diversification element as well. How you mentioned there's so many different ways to get passive income out there. Just research, do your homework and see all the different options that are available out there just to make it as secure as possible.
Yeah, and multiple income streams will be very valuable, right? So we and Adrian, you and I have talked about this in retirement episodes before, but you know, people will typically have, you know, Social Security, maybe a pension, money from their retirement accounts, but then having an additional stream, we do have plenty of clients with this where they've got money coming from things like rental properties, or you know, whether commercial or residential, from other businesses they still own or they have invested in. So having these multiple streams of revenue will only make the goal of financial freedom and the goal of passive income, it'll only make that easier to attain. So just to summarize the 10 seeds of wealth that's covered in the book, once again, the book is The Wealthy Gardener by John Soforek. The 10 Seeds of Wealth is one section where he talks about number one, think wealth, number two, frugality, number three, profitability, number four, get out of debt, number five, save urgently, number six, keep score, number seven, beat inflation, number eight, minimize risk, number nine, multiply it, number 10, passive income. We've gone through it. It sounds like a lot. It's actually very basic, and I think anyone that's listening, that's gotten this far, can review it, and we'll be able to handle this. I'll also state, as we do very frequently, that Adrian and I are also here to help. So we go through these 10 things with our clients. I have not thought of it in this specific structure before, but we go through this in our financial planning process with our clients as it is. So if you're listening and you're thinking, this is something I want to do, but it's a lot, I don't have the time, or I could use some help, Adrian and I are here to help. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please like, subscribe, give us 5 stars, tell your friends and family, take control and achieve your goals.
Schedule a conversation with Roshan, Adrian, or Eric today at retirementlifestyleshow.com. Roshan and Eric are certified financial planner practitioners. They, along with Adrian, are investment advisor representatives and serve clients across the U.S. with financial planning and investment advice through RHA Wealth. If you found this show helpful, gained knowledge, or enjoyed the time you spent with us, tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review. This will help others discover the show. To access our show notes, to download any of the tools mentioned in today's podcast, to ask us a question, or to schedule a conversation, go to retirementlifestyleshow.com. All opinions expressed by podcast hosts and guests are solely their own. While based on information they believe is reliable, neither RHA Wealth nor its affiliates warrants its completeness or accuracy, nor do their opinions reflect the opinion of RHA Wealth. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be regarded as specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. The show hosts offer investment advice through RHA Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, and securities through RHA Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and NFA. Finally, our music is The Chance by Jason Shaw in Audionautix. It's part of the YouTube audio library, and it's licensed under a Creative Commons license. I am Ray Voices. Thank you for listening.